live from the InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome on this Monday, November the 13th, 2017. We've had a lot of reactions to the bombshell accusations in Alabama. We're going to take a look at the reactions from the establishment, especially the Republicans. Republicans seem to be coming at this, the establishment Republicans who do not want to have Judge Roy Moore in Washington are coming after this harder than the Democrats are, I believe. And the Democrats are just kind of laying back as Republicans take point on these attacks. So we're going to take a look at the back and forth, what we have learned over the weekend. But we're also going to take a look at President Trump's trip into Asia. We're going to see what has been happening with the stock markets across the world as people are concerned about whether or not we're going to have tax reform and whether or not we're going to have real tax reform. As I've been saying for months, if they want to sabotage the economy in order to get at President Trump, the way to do it is to take down tax reform or to eviscerate it so that it's not real tax cuts. And this appears to be the tactic of the establishment GOP. And if this happens, we have had a big expectation of regulations cut, taxes cut, both in the U.S. stock market and the worldwide stock market. If this happens, this is going to be a massive pin that is going to burst the bubble of expectations. We have also had earth-shattering. There's been an earthquake, of course, on the Iran-Iraq border, but I think that that pales in comparison to the political earthquake. Yes, I know a lot of lives were lost in that earthquake in Iran and Iraq, but I think a lot of lives are going to be lost as we see the shifting fault lines in the Middle East as we are being pushed into war by the Saudis against Iran and Lebanon. Both the Saudis and the Israelis want to have a war with Iran. And of course, this is something that's been on the books for a very long time. Wesley Clark talked about how there was a set number of, and even talked about the order, the nations that they were going to go after. Even though they have lost, it appears, at least for the time being, in Syria, the forces of regime change, the forces that want to have a greater consolidation throughout the Middle East are still on the move. And I believe that that is what's behind the moves in Saudi Arabia. If you're not worried about this, you don't know what's going on. And so we're going to try to tell you what is happening here. It is a very tricky thing. Quite frankly, I think it is a lot more dangerous than what's going on in North Korea. We can look at North Korea. We can understand that North Korea is being used by China for leverage in terms of trade talks with us. But this is something that could, the situation with Saudi Arabia, Israeli, going after Lebanon, going after Iran, this is something that could percolate throughout the entire Mideast. And it also has a big effect on our U.S. dollar. That's one of the reasons that Bitcoin is going up so much. And of course, it crashed by 30% over the weekend. We'll see how quickly it recovers that, because we have seen a similar thing happened with some comments from Jamie Dimon and others. It lost about a quarter of its price. It went from 4,000 to 3,000 at one point, but within 5 days or less, it had recouped back to the level that it was before those comments. So the question is whether or not Bitcoin is a genuine bubble or whether it is built upon the expectations of the fragility of the U.S. dollar. That is what we're going to be looking at. Meanwhile, we have world stocks lower on U.S. tax reform uncertainty. As we look at the tax reform gradually moving its way through Congress and whether or not they are going to extend the tax cuts on corporations, we have the highest corporate taxes in the world. The Washington Post, typical fake news, came out and said there was something like 1,300 lies of President Trump in the first 10 months of his administration. Even left-leaning PolitiFact went through and said, actually, that's not true. About 70% of those accusations by the Washington Post are lies. So who's the bigger liar? The Washington Post that says that Trump had 1,300 lies, or and then you find out that their statements are 70% lies. And actually, the kind of stuff that they're talking about, which is what made me think about this, was the fact that they said Trump lied when he said we have the highest taxes. We have the highest corporate taxes.
You from the InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight on this Monday, November 13th, 2017. As I said at the top of the hour, world stocks are lower as we have U.S. tax reform uncertainty. And as we look at tax reform, and let's take a quick look at this. Mitch McConnell is out there saying that, well, the middle class may see a tax hike. No, Mitch, that's why you've got to go. We don't have tax reform from Republicans that brings us tax hikes. It's very interesting as we look at this over the last week or so that the narrative that has come out by the establishment media, and guess who led this narrative? It was the Washington Post 6 days ago. And then you had all the other establishment media like Reuters, CNBC, NPR, Time Magazine, all picking it up last Friday. But it was about a week ago that Washington Post came out and said, hey, the Congressional Budget Office says that we are going to have the deficit go up by $1.5 trillion over the next 10 years if we pass these tax cuts. Let's put that in perspective. If you look at a graph of what has happened with the national debt under Obama's administration, go back to 2009, $10.6 trillion. Where was it in 2017? $19.9 trillion. You remember that they've been jumping this thing anywhere from $1 trillion to $1.5 trillion per year under Obama. We were talking about that. We were saying this is unsustainable. We cannot continue to do this. And yet, did you hear any complaints from the Washington Post as Obama was spending us into oblivion, increasing the national debt every year by $1 trillion or more? No, you didn't hear anything from the Washington Post, from CNBC, from NPR, from Time, from Reuters. They weren't worried about that. But if we have a situation where we're going to do what he did in 8 years, he was increasing it every year by about $1 trillion to $1.5 trillion. But if we have a tax cut that would increase the debt over a decade by what Barack Obama did in 1 year, that is a crisis. We can't have that. We have to do something to increase taxes somewhere. That is where we are with these people. And you have to understand, as we look at what's going on worldwide with the tax markets, with the stock markets, you call them the tax markets, if you because they have built in an expectation of tax cuts. Tax cuts grow the economy. If you don't believe that, look at what the expectation of a tax cut has done to the economy, and not just the stock market. It's done this with consumer expectations. It's done it with small business expectations. So it's had some real effects, some real positive effects. What if the tax cuts weren't just vaporware, weren't just smoke and mirrors? What if they were really true? What if we had some Republicans other than Mitch McConnell in charge of this? People like Mitch McConnell, people like John McCain, and Bob Corker, who will burn down the world economy so that they can get at Trump and make him look bad. They will harm you and your family to make Trump look bad, especially if you're one of those deplorables who voted for him. Now, The Hill is saying that the GOP is nearing initial victory on tax reform. They're saying that they think they may have something going through here. We'll see whether or not this is true. As I said before, Mitch McConnell said, well, we may be raising taxes on the middle class. Middle class may see a tax increase. And Representative Warren Davidson, Republican of Ohio, member of the Freedom Caucus, those are the people who really believe in freedom and limited government in the Constitution, said on Twitter, he said, hashtag tax reform. If it raises your taxes, that's the wrong direction. So we'll see what is going to be coming up. We don't really know exactly. They're still negotiating things between the House and the Senate. Some of the things that are happening now at this point, they say the number of Republicans publicly opposing or leaning against the bill is in the single digits. Representative Mark Walker of North Carolina, chairman of the Conservative Republican Study Committee, told The Hill it will be difficult for members who voted against Obamacare repeal to go 0-2 on their campaign promises. Difficult, but not impossible. These are people that we have seen. Again, let's call out the roll call of shame. People like McCain, people like Bob Corker, they really don't care, do they? They've already said they're leaving. I mean, McCain says he's sick. He's not long for this world. And Bob Corker and others have said, well, we're not going to run for reelection, but we are going to stick around long enough to burn down Trump by burning down the U.S. economy. Those are the GOP rhinos, Republicans in name only. And they don't really care if they go 0-2 on the promises. An amendment from the Ways and Means Committee Chairman Kevin Brady, a Republican from Texas, added something to the bill on Thursday. They said that bolsters the odds of success in the House. And what they added was an amendment that created a new 9% tax rate for some small business income. That got the support of the National Federation of Independent Business, which panned the initial House bill. It also restored an adoption tax credit, which is a top priority for conservatives. That is something that has been on in the past, and it disappears. Try to incentivize and make it easier for people to adopt children, to get them out of institutions. And that is a tax credit, not a deduction. So that is something that's very important. However, you know, when we look at this, and again, for small businesses, putting in a 9% tax rate, we have to understand that taxes on businesses, especially on small businesses, you can either send that money to Washington and have them spend it on themselves and maybe dole a little bit of it back to you as if you were a kid on an allowance, or you can leave it in your community. You can leave it in your family's budget. Do you want them budgeting how you're going to live? That's exactly why we do not want them running our health care. I want to take a quick look at what happened in a university. This is Fresno State University in California. How many times have we seen that the left merely wants to censor what other people are saying? They don't want to come up with a counter argument because they don't have a good argument. So here's a situation in Fresno State University, a professor, California professor, on video, who tries to censor pro-life students who are drawing on a sidewalk with chalk. He tells them he's been told that he needs to undergo First Amendment training. How long does that take? he's a professor. He knows what the First Amendment is. And then he needs to pay $17,000 as a result of the district court settlement. And if you're watching, you can see the video of what happens. Now, the interesting thing about what he did was, as they were writing some pro-life slogans on the sidewalk in chalk, he came up and started rubbing it out with his shoe. Because that's always the left's approach, to censor what you have to say. And they said, we have permission. We've even gone and asked for permission when they don't really need it. See, that's the whole thing. They don't really need to have free speech. This is a public institution here, of all things, the universities, and we've had this discussion many times. They used to be bastions in support of free speech, they said, but not anymore. So he says, yeah, you have permission to put it down. And I have permission to get rid of it, says the professor as he starts rubbing it out with his foot. He says, this is our part of free speech. See, that's part of the left's free speech. The left's free speech is to suppress your free speech, not to counter it, not to have there he is right there rubbing it with his foot. Yeah. He says, college campuses are not free speech areas. He says, do you understand? Obviously, you don't understand them. He's lecturing them on this. Well, we had the same situation when we arrived at Bunkerville. The BLM had put up a little fence, plastic silt fences, and had a professionally printed sign, because, you know, money is no object for these people, and said First Amendment area. Now, the absurdity of this is the context that this was out in the middle of a vast wilderness that had been roped off and owned by the federal government. They declared that as federal lands. Didn't belong to anybody, belonged to the government. And so in the midst of all of this area, they say, you can come right here in this little area and you can say what you want. And there was nobody anywhere around us, nowhere close to where anybody lived, nowhere close to a city, nowhere close to a road. Nobody would see it. And somebody put up a handwritten sign and said, the First Amendment is not an area. It is not an area. But these people will censor what you have to say. And of course, the political trial of the Bundys continues, as we pointed out on Friday, and it goes way beyond the censorship of free speech. They have shut down every aspect of the Bill of Rights in that particular trial, and it continues to go on. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. Welcome back. I'm David Knight on this Monday, November 13th, 2017. Thank you for joining us, and we thank you for your support. You know, we had last week the one-year anniversary of President Trump winning the election. We had a 34-hour broadcast special. We called it American Rebirth and Renaissance. And as part of that, we offered 50% discounts on many of our most popular products, as well as free shipping. And, you know, when we look at what happened over this last several days, you understand that we are not only under the kind of censorship that we just saw with that professor at Fresno in California, where he comes along and he says, oh, well, you have a right to put free speech up, and I have a right to delete your free speech. That's my free speech. And we're seeing that everywhere on Twitter. That was a very simple visual example of what is happening on Twitter. And it is algorithmic. It's very sophisticated when Twitter does it. There was 500,000 people tweeting about hashtag DNC leaks, trying to show people what was actually leaked, the content that actually came out about the corrupt Democrat National Party, and showing how Hillary Clinton had controlled that. And now we find out that she actually bought it with tens of millions of dollars that she had. So she bought that party. She bought the nomination. They didn't want you to see that. So they deleted half of the 500,000 tweets about that. Anything they can to keep people from looking at it. Look at the Russian investigation and so forth and so on. And so there is a very sophisticated algorithmic censorship that is going on. But there's also economic censorship. And you can see it this last weekend as you had sponsors say, well, we're going to pull our sponsorship from Sean Hannity's show, Keurig, the coffee manufacturer. And so now you got people smashing their coffee machines. There's a way that you can stand up for free speech, and there's a way that you can support InfoWars, and that's with the products that we sell to support your health, to support the health of your family. And so right now, we have this sale that began with the commemoration of President Trump's election. And here are some of the items that are 50% off with free shipping. Super Male and Super Female Vitality, both 50% off with free shipping. Biome Defense 50, that's our probiotic formula. Again, if you don't have good gut health, and if you're sick and you take antibiotics, that's going to kill your probiotics, your good bacteria that you need in your gut. And so this is a way to restore that. 50% off Biome Defense. Also, 50% off all apparel. That is t-shirts, caps, that sort of thing. Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix, 50% off with free shipping. A great way to get your baseline vitamins and minerals without taking a lot of pills. Secret 12, our vitamin B12 formula, 50% off with free shipping. Super Blue Fluoride-Free Mouthwash, 50% off with free shipping. We take out the fluoride. We put in things like colloidal, or rather nano silver, and iodine, things that are going to fight bacteria in your mouth. So this is a great special that we have going on. Take a look at the items that we have there. There's other things that are on sale. Look at what people have said in the third-party reviews that are we have on our site. And thank you so much for your support. Go to InfoWarsStore.com to see those other specials. Let's talk about what happened yesterday, 1 week after the shooting in Sutherland Springs, Texas. They said, of course, this is a fallout that is coming from this. And this may be perhaps the best thing that comes out of this to save lives. The awareness of people that you have to have somebody in the church or whatever the other soft target is. We've talked about this before with school shootings. People need to understand this with church shootings. That's why I spent so much time on this a week ago, replaying the interview with the guy from South Africa who had defended a church there. And that was an event that had happened 24 years ago. For the last 24 years, Charles Van Wyk has been trying to get Christians to understand that they have not only a right, but a duty to protect themselves, to protect others. And I think people have gotten this message. Wall Street Journal this weekend. This Sunday, some churchgoers may choose to pack guns with their Bibles. Again, I talked to an Episcopal bishop, I think it was on Friday, also talking about how he was had always carried but would not carry in church. And he said, yeah, I just have to get my head around that. But people are coming to that awareness that this is something that needs to be done. Meanwhile, there was a commemorative service at the site of the church. That church has been hit with so many bullets that people said, well, it's going to have to be substantially rebuilt. They have decided not to rebuild that. They're going to demolish it, and they're going to rebuild a church building elsewhere for the church. They're going to turn it into a memorial garden. Here's part of what was said at the commemoration ceremony.
Do you forgive the shooter?
Yes. And to be quite honest, I am more angry with the systems around than I am the shooter.
He's more angry with the systems around than he is with the shooter. And I think by that what he means is we've seen the failure of the system to keep this guy in prison. I mean, you can talk about the failure to put him on a database, but what about the failure to keep him incarcerated? This is a guy who had escaped a mental institution, had threatened officers, had tried to obtain illegally some firearms when he was on the military base, but he had beaten his wife and his stepson at the time, cracking the toddler's skull. How is this guy only get a year in jail? How does he get out with just a dishonorable discharge? And it's absolutely amazing that he would not be entered into the database. But look at what is going on inside the Army. They have now lifted a ban on waivers for recruits with a history of mental health issues. I mean, this is going beyond putting trannies into the military. That is a mental illness and has always been recognized as such. Remember going back to MASH, Corporal Klinger, getting a Section 8. Section 8 says you're crazy. He was trying to convince people he's crazy by dressing up as a woman. But now that is considered to be a virtue in our crazy society. And so they now decided to open Army recruiting to those with mental health conditions. Because why? Because the Army is facing the challenging goal of recruiting 80,000 new soldiers through September of next year. Let's not try to get good people. It used to be the Army was looking for a few good men. Now they'll take anything they can get, including people who have a history of self-mutilation, people who have bipolar disorder. And, of course, people like that are going to be on heavy meds like SSRIs, which are going to exacerbate their conditions. We have seen this over and over again. This is insanity. And this goes beyond the lack of recording the transgressions of an individual, the lack of, not keeping him incarcerated because of the violence that he had done to other people, done to his family, not recorded that he was a violent individual. This is the real insanity. The idea that they're going to grow, they've got their recruiting goals, and if they can't get good quality people, they're going to train people with bipolar disorder and a history of self-mutilation and other mental health issues. They're going to train them to be killers. Is this not insanity? I mean, we need to be looking at the real intention of the Army in the first place. Yes, we were supposed to have a permanent Navy, and you could extend that to the Air Force. But we were never meant to have a permanent standing army. An officer corps, yes, that would train people. But a regulated, that means a well-trained citizen militia, like we see in Switzerland. That was the design of the founders. Not to have a professional permanent standing army that is now going to be filled, evidently, with people with mental illness so they can meet their goal of numbers.
War on corruption. It's David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. Let's take a look at some of the reactions to the Washington Post report that came out, I think it was Thursday, about Judge Roy Moore in Alabama, man who defeated the Republican establishment candidate in spite of the fact that they ran incredibly negative ads, spending, I think it was $32 million from the Senate Republican Fund. And then as he won the nomination, they had to find some way to pull back. They've now found a way to pull it back. So now they're saying, well, we're not going to give him any money from the Republican Senate Fund. No, really? Oh, what a surprise. After you decided that you were going to jump into that race on the side of Luther Strange, a guy who had known ethical violations that were provable, you're now going to come out after... You're going to pull away your campaign financing of Judge Roy Moore. And let's take a look at the way some of these people have doubled down. We've had Mitt Romney tweet out this last weekend. I responded to it on Twitter. But Mitt Romney said, innocent until proven guilty, is for criminal convictions, not elections. He says, I believe Leigh Korfman. Her account is too serious to ignore. Moore is unfit for office and should step aside. Okay, well, I replied to that. I said, remember when Harry Reid lied about your taxes? And when Harry Reid was caught lying, what did he have to say? He didn't say, well, I'm sorry, I was mistaken. Yes, we look at this, but who knew at the time? No, he just looked the reporter in the eye after he'd lied about Mitt Romney, said Mitt Romney didn't pay taxes. Harry Reid looked the reporter in the eye and said, well, he didn't win, did he? In other words, mission accomplished. I don't really care whether I lie about somebody else. So this is the environment that Mitt Romney says, well, you know, innocent till proven guilty is just for criminal convictions. It doesn't apply in politics. Well, I think, you know, when we look at this, I think in politics, you ought to be very skeptical. You ought to be skeptical of the source. When you look at some source, like the Washington Post, that has gone to every extent to libel, and I mean that they put it in print, folks, it's libel, to libel Judge Roy Moore and the foundation that he was associated with, saying that the foundation had paid him money and that it was not reported properly by them or by Roy Moore. The reality, and that was a very easy charge to disprove, and it would have been an easy one for the Washington Post to investigate, but they didn't. And it was picked up by all the mainstream media. I remember the day that I got in the car to drive home and local news radio, talk radio here in Austin, which is very anti-Trump, anti-conservative, local people here. Of course, they carry Rush Limbaugh, but they're very, very negative as far as Republicans go. And I remember hearing the guy who's on there goes, that's it. See these hypocritical Christians out there skimming money and all this stuff, right? And he was just ready to believe it because he didn't like Roy Moore. And that's kind of the way this is breaking. People who like him and trust him don't trust the Washington Post. And maybe you shouldn't trust the Washington Post. But of course, the people who hate President Trump and hate Republicans and think that anybody who voted for Trump or voted for Roy Moore is deplorable, they're more than willing to believe this, especially in this climate of accusations that we have. Now, understand, this climate of accusations that we have is mostly coming out of corrupt Hollywood. Hollywood has been corrupt, folks, going back to silent pictures. It was a nonstop orgy back in the 1920s. It's one of the reasons that they created the MPAA. Washington said, either you regulate yourself or we'll regulate you. And so then they came up with some very strict rules about what could and could not be done. And it was a studio system. And so the studios were able to enforce those rules. But then as we started getting away from the studio system in the 60s and 70s, they started doing as they wished, which was basically putting their lifestyle on film and making it the lifestyle of America. And that's what's come out. So as we look at what's coming out of Hollywood and Harveywood, I guess we should call it, it's not really a surprise to see it from those people. But it is very inconsistent with what we have seen from Roy Moore. And I would say it's those internal inconsistencies for me, more than the fact that I support Roy Moore. And so, yes, I'm going to look at this with a little bit of skepticism that Mitt Romney doesn't. But when I look at the consistency here and I look at the initial report from the Washington Post, and again, Ann Coulter tweeted out over the weekend, she said, well, you take one serious accusation and then you mix in three non-serious accusations. And that's what we saw with the Washington Post. And that was what I talked about on Friday. And I said, that to me showed me that they were reaching, that they were trying to expand this because you've got one serious allegation of a 14-year-old. And then you've got three women who say, well, you know, we were 16, 17, 18, 19, whatever. And in that age, okay, so now the Washington Post has a follow-up article says Judge Roy Moore is going after teenagers. Yeah, 19-year-old is a teenager, the way that they put it out here. But whether or not that was true, none of them alleged any inappropriate conduct. For somebody who is an older man and says that he wants to talk to women, to interview them, to date them, that doesn't imply anything sexual. It means that he is trying to get to know these people, that he would like to marry a younger woman rather than somebody perhaps at his age, that maybe there's less to choose from because most of the women have either been married or divorced or whatever. Maybe he's looking for somebody that is about to become marrying age. I don't see anything wrong with that. When we look at the fact, and a lot of stuff has come out, if you look at Twitter, Look at the fact that we had Jerry Seinfeld dating a 17-year-old in high school, and everybody thought that was great. They were doing it publicly, and everybody thought that was just great. As I talked about, the French president, Macron, he was 15 years old. His teacher, who was 40 years old, married at the time, had three children, started, quote-unquote, dating him. You can read into that whatever you wish. You want to talk about the fact that nobody wanted to complain about any pedophile issues there in that particular relationship. So it's not just the age difference. The age difference is not anything criminal. It is the sexual misconduct. Talking to somebody that is 17 or 18 years old, if you're a 32-year-old man, that should not be a criminal situation. So what they did was they took non-serious charges and they conflated them with one serious charge to try to establish a pattern of behavior. Why? Because that's very important. If you are a pedophile, if you are a power person who is into sexual assaults because of the power issue, there's going to be more than one. And there's going to be a recurring pattern. That's why pedophiles are so dangerous. And that's why when you look at somebody like Bishop Pell in Australia, you see a pattern of dozens of people who are involved in that, not just a single accuser, because they do not stop at one person. And so there isn't a pattern of behavior that I see here in Judge Roy Moore. So that's one of the things that I don't see, a consistency in their charges. Before we get down in the details, before we look at the fact that they portrayed these women as being politically neutral or Republican, and in fact, one of them is very heavily involved in the Democrat Party. Before you even get to that, the inconsistency and the reaching on the part of the Washington Post, who, as I point out with the financial stuff, it was very easily misproven. The fact is that that organization had incurred liabilities from Roy Moore, and they reported those liabilities, but they had not paid him. So he had not reported any income, which is exactly right. You don't report income that you don't receive. That's the kind of desperation from the Washington Post that we have come to expect. And it's the kind of desperation that we've come to expect from Mitt Romney and others. You know, he says, innocent until proven guilty is for criminal convictions, not for elections. I replied in a tweet, I said, innocent until proven guilty is an American value. Those like you, Mitt Romney, who don't value that fundamental principle are unfit for office, and you should not run again. How dare him say that because there are serious charges? And then I did a follow-up tweet. I said, if only I had thought of this, I could have accused Mitt Romney and John McCain of murder. I wouldn't need to have proof, but that's a serious charge, isn't it? And just the serious allegation of murder should have been enough to cause these guys to step down from running. Let's apply that same logic to Mitt Romney. If he decides to run, let's just accuse him baseless charges that we don't have any proof for whatsoever. And if they're serious enough charges, Mitt Romney should have to step down, especially if he doesn't believe in the principle of innocent until proven guilty. Well, let's just go slander anybody who is out there. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. Welcome back. I'm David Knight. I want to play some of the clips of what people are saying about these revelations of Judge Roy Moore and what he has had to say, and some observations that I have about this in terms of how do we view this? What do we do with this information? Because quite frankly, something that is this old, and this is one of the reasons why the people who have statute of limitations on child abuse, which I don't agree with, but the argument that they make is that as a lot of time goes by, as it typically does in these cases, that it is very difficult to prove it. And that's the argument that they made to keep it very short, like 3 years. I don't agree with that. I think at the very least, it ought to be something like it is in California, where you get the age of 18 plus a certain number of years. I think there they have a number, I think they have 8 years past the time that you turn 18. But I would support not having a statute of limitations. But the reason that they have it on here at all is because it is very difficult to prove this as decades go by and nothing has been said, as people are not there to, we don't have the evidence immediately there that they can corroborate that with. So then it becomes a case of he said, she said. And who do you believe? Whose credibility are you going to go with? And usually it is a person who is in a position of power That's why it becomes so difficult. So we're going to get back to this. We're going to take a look at the politics behind this as well. In just one moment, before we do, real quickly, I'll remind you that the American Rebirth and Renaissance 34-hour broadcast special that we had to celebrate the election of President Trump is still running. And we've got a lot of items that are still 50% off with free shipping. Things like Super Male, Super Female Vitality, Biome Defense 50, Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix, all apparel, T-shirts, caps, all those. Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix, Secret 12, our vitamin B12 formula, and Super Blue fluoride-free mouthwash. All of these are 50% off with free shipping. We also have DNA Force back in stock, 25% off with free shipping. And again, that's a big discount on that. That's a very expensive product to produce, and we frequently run out of stock on that because we have to produce these in batches, and in just one batch, the BioPQQ, which is the main ingredient in that, is so expensive. It's about $30,000 to produce that. So it's a premium product. 25% off is a big savings, plus free shipping. Take a look at the specials at InfoWarsStore.com. We really do appreciate your support. That's what funds this program and everything we do here at InfoWars. All right, let's go back to the comments that we got from people. Remember, I was just talking about Mitt Romney. He said, sorry, innocent until proven guilty. That doesn't cut it. These are serious charges. So you're unfit for office. That's the way. The guy who, if he'd been elected, we wouldn't have had Obamacare. We would have had Romney Care. Romney Care that was enacted in Massachusetts along with Ted Kennedy. It was Mitt Romney and Ted Kennedy who put together what eventually became Obamacare nationwide. No essential difference in the way these two were set up. The establishment had determined that they were going to give us a choice. You know, they were going to hedge their bets just in case Obama didn't get reelected. We were still going to have a Republican shill who was going to give us Obamacare. It would have been Romney Care. And that's the way these guys operate. We look at the fact that they're still trying to push Luther Strange, a guy with a lot of corruption issues, a guy who is not a conservative, a guy who is not on board with the Trump agenda. They want him, however, in Washington. They do not want somebody like Roy Moore. Mitch McConnell and others do not want him. Let's play the clip from Judge Roy Moore responding to these allegations from the Washington Post and the people that they talked to, the woman that they talked to in Alabama.
Country. My opponent is 11 points behind. That came out just days before this article came out. They're desperate. This article is a prime example of fake news, an attempt to divert attention from the true issues which affect our country, like health care, military readiness, tax reform, immigration, and national debt. We do not intend to let the Democrats or the established Republicans or anybody else behind this story stop this campaign. There are investigations going on. In the next few days, there will be revelations about the motivations and the content of this article. They will be brought to the public.
And again, understand that as we look at the response from the Republicans, one of the things that they did was to pull any funding from him from the Republican Senate fund. They had already spent $30 million. Think about that. $30 million. It was just back in the 2000 elections between Bush and Al Gore that Al Gore was saying that Bush bought the election because he spent over $100 million. Now their Senate, the Republican senators are spending $30 million to defeat Roy Moore in a primary. They really don't want him in Washington. And here's a list of the Republicans calling for him to step down. Now, interestingly enough, if you look at this list that was put together by Washington Examiner, all of them will add the caveat, if these are true. If these are true. If true, then his candidacy is not sustainable. If true, he should step down. Except for people like Mitt Romney and John McCain. John McCain, like Romney, says, these allegations are deeply disturbing and disqualifying. He should immediately step aside and allow the people of Alabama to elect a candidate they can be proud of. You know, somebody like Luther Strange. You've got Pat Toomey saying, Luther Strange would be a strong candidate for a write-in. No, he wouldn't. But the Republicans who keep telling you that they want more of the people with an R behind their name, they don't really care. They would be just fine with the Democrat from Alabama. What they don't want is somebody who is going to stand up to them. And that's the other part of this issue when I look at what's going on. I said the first thing that concerned me was the fact they would take serious allegations about this 14-year-old girl, and then they would conflate them with allegations that he had actually, with parental approval, talked to girls who were 17, 18, 19, I think maybe one of them was 16 years old, but with the parents' approval, doing it openly, reading poetry to them, playing guitar for them, and so forth. That is absolutely inconsistent with the serious allegations about the 14-year-old. And the other thing that is inconsistent with the character of this is that Roy Moore has twice been removed from office because he would not violate his principles. And it's that kind of backbone that gets him such deep support in Alabama. But when you look at somebody who would be the type of individual who would do this and do this, those types of individuals do this repeatedly, they would also be the type of people who would grasp power, political power, by all means. And if it was something that they could hang on to by compromising their principles, they would find some way to work it out and not call it a compromise. Well, we got this for that, and you know, we always have to get along. Roy Moore stood firm. He didn't want power so much that he would give up his principles. And that, to me, is very inconsistent with the kind of charges that are being made by that one individual. Meanwhile, NBC's Chuck Todd said that when he looked at what Mitch McConnell said, he said the reaction seemed to be, quote-unquote, orchestrated. Chuck Todd said, is Mitch McConnell the way he has been? This clearly felt almost orchestrated. The minute, within an hour that this came out, many of McConnell's allies came out and said, he's got to go. It sounds like Mitch McConnell has decided that it is worse if Roy Moore wins. Yes, that's right. That's what the people at NBC News said. And that's what I see. When I see people like Mitt Romney and John McCain immediately shooting from the hip and saying, this is serious allegations, he's got to go, whether or not they know that it's real. Seeing that they pull back their money that they never wanted to spend any on behalf of Roy Moore after spending over $30 million to defeat him in the primaries, they were looking for a reason to get out. Here's what John Kasich had to say.
I want to start with Roy Moore in Alabama. You have said his actions, the actions described, make him unfit for office. So you believe those accusers?
Look, you have some corroboration, and we're not talking now about convicting somebody of some criminal offense. It's just really a matter as to whether he ought to be the candidate, the standard bearer of the Republican Party. And I just think he shouldn't be, and I hope that the people of Alabama, the party officials, will look at it again. But this is not about, you know, Obama or left wing. I just don't believe that it is, and I'm saddened by it. I mean, I'm the father of two twin daughters, and I just think it's inappropriate, and I would just really would like it if he stepped aside.
But you also tweeted that the GOP must not support him.
Yeah, I don't think they should. I mean, I think he should step aside on this. He can continue to defend himself, but I think
who, when he had, you know, absolutely no chance of winning,
not to be
stayed in and said, we need to have some kind of a brokered convention. And even though he hadn't won any primaries, he was going to stay in there and try to take Trump down.
Can you imagine?
You have to understand, this is the GOP establishment, and it is no different from the Democrat establishment.
So, you know, let's see where it goes. But you know,
yeah, let's see where it goes. All right, we got to take a break, and that's that's where these guys are. These are the guys that you trust, right? Mitt Romney, John McCain, John Kasich. You look at those guys who will do anything for power. And then you look at Judge Roy Moore, who will do anything for principle. I think it's pretty clear to me who's telling the truth. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
Money.
Censored, broadcasting from the great state of Texas, worldwide, it's David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. In the next segment, we're going to take a look at the charges against Roy Moore, and we're going to play for you the clips back and forth of what the new accuser with Gloria Allred said, as well as what Roy Moore and his wife said. But in this segment, I want to talk about the I guess I could call them the gaslighting left. The people who want to tell you what language you can use, what you can think, what is allowed and what is not allowed. They are going to make you say that 2 plus 2 equals 5. Again, that's the Orwellian society that they are setting up. If they can get you to deny obvious facts, if they can get you to deny reality, they own you. That's why when we look at these situations, they can be absurd, they can be silly and funny, but you have to understand that at the bottom of it, this is an Orwellian tactic that is very, very serious. Here's an example. A teacher in England is facing discipline after using the wrong pronoun for a transgender student. A school in England suspended a teacher after he accidentally referred to a transgender boy student as a girl. Math teacher Joshua Sutcliffe, see, when they mean a transgender boy student, what they mean is a girl who says she is a boy, okay? So this math teacher, his name is Joshua Sutcliffe, 27 years old, said, "Well done, girls," to two students at Oxfordshire Secondary School. He apologized to the transgender student. However, he now faces a disciplinary hearing this week, and officials could charge him with misconduct because he misgendered the person. While the suggestion that gender is fluid conflicts sharply with my Christian beliefs, I have never looked to impose my convictions on others, says Sutcliffe, who is also a Christian pastor. No, you play by their games. You will not call reality what it is. And so you want to play by their silly games? You want to say that 2 plus 2 is 5? You want to let them control the language? They control you. So you played their game. In your effort to be so accommodating and so accepting of everybody, you have denied the truth, Pastor. And now you suffer the consequences. I don't feel sorry for him at all, quite frankly. He's getting what he deserves. And it's Christian pastors like this who refuse to tell people what the truth is, which is why Christianity has become nonsense in England. Nobody even pays any attention to it anymore in England for the most part. Here's another example from Breitbart. 77% of Democrats with a four-year college degree think that sex is not determined at birth. And there you can see that picture, a smiling woman, or maybe a man, or maybe Corporal Klinger. I don't know who this is. I don't want to misgender this individual here. Says not all women have vaginas, and not all people with vaginas are women. It's like, no, that's not true. That's not true. And they say 3 out of 4 college-educated Democrats now believe that a man can be a woman if he says so. If he says so. And now we got people that are identifying as a different nationality or a different ethnic group or whatever. I mean, you know, you don't talk about transnationalism. I mean, this is beyond globalism, folks. This is the mental illness that is a very odd mixture, really, of 1984 and Brave New World. And as I said before, if you're willing to not oppose them, they're perfectly willing to keep you in a corner and let you be distracted with sex, with pornography, become self-absorbed, take drugs, just like in Brave New World. If you oppose them, however, if you come back and say, hey, it's okay to be white. Oh, I noticed that you're a male or female because of your genitalia or whatever, right? No. That is not going to be allowed. That nail that is sticking up and telling the truth will be hammered down. Stay with us when we come back. We'll take a look at the accusations against Judge Roy Moore. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
It's the real news. Live from the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight on this Tuesday, November 14th, 2017. There was a press conference yesterday conducted by Gloria Allred. She had a tearful confession from a young woman who said that she was sexually assaulted by Roy Moore when she was very young. I want to play that clip for you. I want to get the reaction from Roy Moore and his wife, and then I want to tell you what the developments have been following that. First of all, let's play the clip, video clip number two.
Later to let me know that he was coming to Los Angeles. Giving, he again called me after he had just landed in Los Angeles. I stood up, and he came to me and started kissing me open-mouthed as he was pulling me towards him. He then grabbed my shoulder and began kissing me again very aggressively and placed his hand on my breast. I pulled back and walked to another part of the room. He then walked up, grabbed my hand, and walked me into the bedroom. I walked out. He then turned me around and said, "Let's lay down and watch some telly-telly." He put me in an embrace, and I tried to push him away. I pushed his chest to put space between us, and I said, "Come on, man, get real." He repeated my words back to me, "Get real," as he began thrusting his genitals.
Wait, was that the right clip? Because that lady was blonde, and I thought it was an older lady that was brunette. Oh, that's right. That was Gloria Allred. And that was 3 weeks before the election of President Trump that she pulled exactly the same trick. This woman's name was Summer Zervas. Summer Zervas was somebody who had worked with Donald Trump on The Apprentice. Remember we had the Bush tape that came out from the Bush family talking about Donald Trump make it with the locker room talk? Remember all the Republicans saying, "That's it. He's got to pull out. You know, he's got to stop. This is done. He's over with. He can't be our nominee." And then Gloria Allred, who, like clockwork, you know, these people have the same MO, don't they? They're kind of like the people that we've been hearing so much about, like Harvey Weinstein, like Kevin Spacey, like Louis C.K. They do have a characteristic behavior that people have noticed over the years, don't they? And Gloria Allred does as well. She is a celebrity lawyer who thrives on these type of cases. She and her daughter, they have these press conferences. She did not defend Harvey Weinstein, but her daughter did. And her daughter was also the one who was defending Kathy Griffin. And Kathy Griffin had some choice words to say about it. We don't really have time to get into that because we've got a short segment here. But you have to understand that when we see the Washington Post that is telling us that Matt Drudge is Russian propaganda and uses InfoWars as the key one to accuse Matt Drudge, linking us with RT and Sputnik and all three of us, and look, he links to these people, so therefore he's pushing Russian propaganda. And then the same week, we have the Washington Post tell us that Judge Roy Moore, who the people of Alabama have known for 40 years, is now a secret child molester, and he kept that secret for all of those years. And this is the testimony that we got yesterday from Gloria Allred. And just like clockwork, you know, she's like the cuckoo that comes out of the clock 3 weeks before the election, and she always comes up with these stories. So here she is yesterday with a new accuser for Judge Roy Moore.
Mr. Moore reached over and began groping me and putting his hands on my breast. I tried to open my car door to leave, but he reached over and he locked it so I could not get out. I tried fighting him off while yelling at him to stop. But instead of stopping, he began squeezing my neck, attempting to force my head onto his crotch. I continued to struggle. I was determined that I was not going to allow him to force me to have sex with him.
Okay, this is a very different type of attack that's been described by this woman. And I want to give you the response from Judge Roy Moore and his wife. Here's that clip.
Okay, thank you all for being here tonight. I thank all the people in Gallant that have come at this late hour and for being here. I want to address what's been brought out on television today by Gloria Allred and a client that she has about things I allegedly did. I want to make it perfectly clear. The people of Alabama know me. They know my character. They know what I've stood for in the political world for over 40 years. And I can tell you without hesitation, this is absolutely false. I never did what she said I did. I don't even know the woman. I don't know anything about her. I don't even know where the restaurant is or was. And if you look at this situation, you'll see that because I'm 11 points ahead, or 10 or 11 points ahead, this race being just 28 days off, that this is a political maneuver and has nothing to do with reality. It's all about politics. And I'd like to let my wife make a few statements.
I've been married to this man for 32 years. We've been together for 33 altogether. He has never one time lifted a finger to me. He is the most gentle, most kind man that I have ever known in my life. He's godly. He's loving, and everybody in this community knows it. These are our church members. These are our family. These are our friends. These are people that know him just like I do. These things are false, and it's ugly. It's the ugliest politics that I've ever been in my life.
Well, you've never been up against Gloria Allred before. We played, started out playing Summer Zervos. And again, she was making these accusations just a couple of weeks before the election. This was somebody who had worked on The Apprentice 6 months earlier. I think she had a business or something. She had sent an email to the Trump campaign and said, let's reconnect. That was not responded to, or it was ignored or whatever. So she is a woman scorned, and she makes this accusation with Gloria Allred right before the election. And then the Trump campaign showed that email where she was saying, let's reconnect. This is a woman who had claimed that she was violently assaulted, sexually assaulted violently by Donald Trump. But she's saying, hey, let's reconnect 6 months earlier. And that wasn't enough. People discounted that, discounted Gloria Allred, who has a pattern of doing this. And then 2 days before the inauguration of President Trump, Gloria Allred and Summer Zervos file a defamation lawsuit against President Trump, saying you have destroyed her reputation by exposing the lies that she told about President Trump. So, yes, the welcome to Washington politics to the Moore family. When we look at this, the thing that I find absolutely amazing is that we have seen, and I mentioned this about the Washington Post story when it broke last Thursday. I talked about it on Friday. I said what they present here are two different Roy Moores in the same story. We now have four different Roy Moores. And understand, in that Washington Post story, you had a Roy Moore who had conducted sexual misconduct with a minor. But he was kind of shy about it. He tries to manipulate this, but he backs off. Then you've got three other women saying, oh, he openly dated us. He asked permission of the parents. The parents encouraged it and so forth. And that's a very different Roy Moore. Now we've got a third Roy Moore from Gloria Allred, and that is a Bill Clinton type of Roy Moore. When you look at people who are sexual predators, when you look at people like Bill Clinton, when you look at people like Ted Kennedy, they have an MO, a method of operation, just as Gloria Allred does. There is a pattern of behavior. There was a pattern of behavior with Louis C.K. Have we seen this pattern of behavior even amongst the accusers? No. We have four different Roy Moores, the one that was known by everybody in the community for 40 years, and we have the Roy Moore that is being described by Gloria Allred in the Washington Post. And so we have four different Roy Moores, and we have two different standards. We have one standard for people like Jerry Seinfeld, who was celebrated for dating a 17-year-old high school student when he was much, much older and a movie star. We have another standard for Macron's wife, who is 25 years old. But you have to understand that the most egregious thing about this is that while they try Judge Roy Moore in the court of public opinion, they do not want the voters to make that decision. So you have Mitch McConnell and the establishment Republicans saying, we will overrule the decision of the voters. If they choose him because they're worried that these charges are not believable, they will shut it down. I'm David Knight. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The false charges made about my previous testimony. My answers have not changed. I've always told the truth, and I have answered every question as I understood them to the best of my recollection, as I will continue to do today. I would like to address recent news reports regarding meetings during the campaign attended by George Papadopoulos and Carter Page, among others. Frankly, I had no recollection of this meeting until I saw these news reports. I do now recall that the March 2016 meeting at the Trump Hotel that Mr. Papadopoulos attended, but I have no clear recollection of the details of what he said at that meeting. After reading his account, and to the best of my recollection, I believe that I wanted to make clear to him that he was not authorized to represent the campaign with the Russian government or any other foreign government for that matter. But I did not recall this event, which occurred 18 months before my testimony of a few weeks ago. And I would gladly have reported it had I remembered it, because I pushed back against his suggestion that I thought may have been improper. As for Mr. Page, while I do not challenge his recollection, I have no memory of his presence at a dinner at the Capitol Hill Club or any passing conversation he may have had with me as he left the dinner. All you have been in campaigns, let me just suggest, but most of you have not participated in a presidential campaign, and none of you had a part in the Trump campaign. And it was a brilliant campaign, I think, in many ways, but it was a form of chaos every day from day one. We traveled sometimes to several places in one day. Sleep was in short supply, and I was still a full-time senator with a very full schedule. During this year, I've spent close to 20 hours testifying before Congress. Before today, I have been asked to remember details from a year ago, such as who I saw on what day, in what meeting, and who said what to when. In all of my testimony, I can only do my best to answer your questions as I understand them and to the best of my memory. But I will not accept and reject accusations that I have ever lied. That is a lie. Let me be clear. I have at all times conducted myself honorably and in a manner consistent with the high standards and responsibilities of the Office of Attorney General, which I revere. I spent 15 years in that department. I love that department. I honor that department and will do my dead level best to be worthy of your Attorney General. So as I said before, my story has never changed. I've always told the truth, and I've answered every question to the best of my recollection, and I will continue to do so today. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'm honored to take your questions.
Okay, and that was the comments by Attorney General Jeff Sessions, talking about how he has spent 20 hours before the congressional committees, talking about whether or not he met some small minor player like George Papadopoulos, a guy who had inflated his resume, not only with the Trump to the Trump campaign, but he inflated his resume with the Trump campaign. And it appears that he had that he was able to sucker in Bob Mueller, as well as another guy who himself was a con man from all reports of foreign ambassadors in the UK, who said, hey, I know Vladimir Putin. Donald Trump. Let's get the two of them together. And neither one of them really had the resume that they were putting out there. Neither one of them had the kind of access that they were talking about. They were spoofing each other. I think the investigation by Mueller has also been spoofed. But this is what we're seeing now. This is this witch hunt. And as I was saying before we went to the break, what we're seeing now with Roy Moore, I believe, is more of that Washington environment. People like Gloria Allred, coming out a few weeks before the election with someone, and we have seen this over and over again. You have to understand the political context for this, folks. Roy Moore is a proxy in the civil war that is going on in the GOP. Remember when they spent millions and millions of dollars for the hand-picked replacement for him, the guy Luther Strange, who was a lobbyist? And remember when he won in spite of that? And then we immediately had senators saying, well, that's it. I'm not going to run again. They're going to take their campaign war chest and run with it. Run for the exits. And that's what they did. On the other side, we were all very encouraged by this. We said, look, these guys are surrendering. They're running away. And we're going to challenge them in the primaries. This is what this is about. If they're able to take down Roy Moore with these types of claims, they're going to be able to do this to any candidate. And they're going to make the case, look, The people on the other side, represented by Bannon in most cases as the most visible spokesperson, McConnell has already said this. He picks losers. He picks people who can't win. He doesn't vet his candidates. And so that's the argument that they're going to make. You have to understand that's what's there. You have to understand that McConnell's GOP spent $8 million opposing conservative candidates like Roy Moore, Mo Brooks, and others, while they only spent $50,000 opposing Democrats. That is a ratio of 160 times more money spent against conservatives that would challenge Mitch McConnell than they did against Democrats. Because Mitch McConnell can survive a loss of a Republican majority as long as he's got his GOP establishment that can put him back in power if they get more than 50 GOP senators. But if he loses his GOP establishment, if the swamp is defeated, he's done. He's done, whether he wins re-election or not. And so just as we saw the fact that we were celebrating the fact, hey, look, Trump beat Jeb Bush with all of his big war chest. Roy Moore beat Mitch McConnell with his big war chest, that GOP Senate Leadership Fund. If you donate to the GOP establishment, you should have your head examined. You don't know who these people are. So, Mitch McConnell is finished if he doesn't finish Roy Moore. That's why it has gotten so dirty. That's what's behind all this stuff. That's the context for it. All right, joining us now is Matt Bracken. We wanted to give that breaking news to you that had happened with Jeff Sessions, as well as what's happening in the Roy Moore contest. And I want to get his reaction to this as well. Again, you can find Matt, Enemies Foreign and Domestic. Well, that fits here, .com. Also Twitter, Matt Bracken 48. That's his Twitter handle. We're going to talk to Matt about the Middle East. We're going to talk about this video that surfaced today talking about killer robots. It's very a visceral video, but you understand this is a very, very broad issue. So Matt has had a lot of experience in the military. He's a former SEAL, part of the Naval Special Warfare Detachment to Beirut in 1983. So he knows what's going on with the military. He knows what's going on with politics as well. So joining us now is Matt Bracken. Thank you so much for joining us, Mr. Bracken.
Good to be with you, David. Almost too much news today to get a grip
on. It is. Yeah, we'll try to squeeze all this stuff in. First of all, do you want to make any comments about what's going on in this never-ending Russian collusion stuff? I mean, they keep coming after Attorney General Sessions on this so that he doesn't get his job done. And today, we were outed as Russian agents along with Matt Drudge. And we got a break. Sorry, I didn't catch the clock there. We're going to come right back to you, and we're going to go straight to Matt Bracken, and I'll turn it over to you, Matt, when we come back. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm David Knight, and we're talking to Matt Bracken, enemiesforeignanddomestic.com, when we return.
Flying itself. Its processor can react 100 times faster than a human. The stochastic motion is an anti-sniper feature. Just like any mobile device these days, it has cameras and sensors, and just like your phones and social media apps, it does facial recognition.
He's showing a small palm-sized
is 3 grams of shaped explosive. This is how it works.
He throws it out the audience. It comes in. It finds a mannequin. Hits it in the forehead.
That little bang is enough to penetrate the skull and destroy the contents.
Again, with a shaped explosive. Joining us now is Matt Bracken. Sorry, Matt, we ran out of time in the previous segment. Again, he has his website is enemiesforeignanddomestic.com. Matt is a self-described freedomista, a constitutionalist who believes in the original intent of the founding fathers. He is a former Navy SEAL, so we wanted to talk to him about what's going on in the Middle East, and thought it'd be interesting to get his comments on killer robots. Now, this, I believe, Matt, was something, this is a film that's going to be shown at the UN today. I think what he's doing is he's illustrating the danger here. I don't know whether they've got something like this. They probably have stuff that is far worse than this. They've got swarms of killing robots and drones and so forth, and they're talking about having killer robots who make these decisions autonomously. Your comment on this?
Well, in northern Iraq, we already saw ISIS, you know, even penned into corners. They were able to access commercial off-the-shelf quad rotors and weaponize them with, you know, grenades. And yes, it became quite a problem. Of course, they're controlled by a human. A couple of years ago, I was given a tour of a naval facility that's in the greatest flight simulator for helicopters around. And they had a prototype mock-up of a small helicopter. It's about a quarter the size of a little bird, or Delta flies around in. You see it and saw it in Black Hawk Down.
Yes.
And it is fully autonomous. It just takes a political decision. The thing will find its own place to land, so that it can recharge its solar batteries. It has a decision-making capability. It'll search out whatever enemy it's given, you know, looking for a specific type of armor, for example. But it could just as easily target school buses or anything else. And this was several years ago when I was told it's already in existence. It already works. It's just a political decision to switch it into autonomous mode. And the thing would go out indefinitely until its weapons were used up. You know, it could charge in the sun and then go hunting every dawn, for example. And then when it gets to a certain level of battery charge on its own, it'll seek out a safe hiding place, you know, a clearing where it can see the sun and charge up. But a little mini drone could sit, for example, on a billionaire tycoon's wall around his swimming pool. And it could sit there in the sun in disguise, even disguised as a bird or an insect, and be charging in the sun and waiting for that unique facial recognition to walk around into range and then zap it. So yes, everything from the, you know, from helicopter sized down to a camouflaged bird size, the technology already exists.
And of course, what they're showing there, I think trying to get a political consensus against this, is to say, this is an assassination.
Works.
What's that?
That always works. Ask a Nobel who invented dynamite. Or when they invented the machine gun to make war so awful nobody would do it.
Yes,
that always
yes.
works.
And exactly. But when we look at this illustration that they created here, what that was an assassination drone, just like you're talking about, a small drone that is programmed for somebody's biometrics. Once it identifies them, boom, takes that person out. And so I think they're looking, showing this and saying, hey, if you guys go down this path, you're going to be the first ones, the first targets that are going to come up, these politicians. I don't really know how you walk this back. I mean, I've talked to Noel Sharkey. There's a lot of people that are concerned about killer robots that are going to be unleashed on the battlefield making autonomous decisions, because without human oversight of this, it's the same thing that I'm concerned about with self-driving autonomous cars. I mean, I've worked too much with software to trust these things to make life and death decisions like this. I find this very, very disturbing. And what they're wargaming and developing, if they haven't already developed it, is to have swarms of killer drones, to have robots that are going to go out in a certain area. This is going to be a weapon of mass destruction, like nuclear arms. And it's not really clear where this is going to end up, is it, Matt?
We've had area dispersal weapons for decades, for generations now, where a big canister will be shot over the battlefield to release bomblets. In this case, the bomblets could each be a bird-sized drone that's, for example, searching for the camouflage pattern of the enemy. Be very easy to do. Now,
And the other thing about it, too, let me interject here, Matt, because what the software will do is introduce plausible deniability. If somebody introduces some of these other weapons, or they push the launch codes on some weapon of mass destruction, you can trace it back up to some human. But if this stuff goes crazy, they can say, hey, you know, it was a software error. Sorry, we wiped out the lower third of that country, but, you know, it was a software error. We didn't make that decision. It was just a bug.
I'd like to, if I can, I'd like to pull the focus back and get a higher view. This reminds me so much of 1914. In the Middle East, we've got a realignment of empires going on, similar to the what blew up the stability of the competing empires in 1914 in Europe, with yes. the Saudis, the Iranians, etc. Mm-hmm. We have also an emerging technology that we've just tested, sort of. We've seen some tests of it in Iraq, the drones, for example. But my fear is that, like World War I, where trench warfare yeah. and machine guns, tanks, airplanes were all introduced, we're on the cusp of a huge tectonic slip fault where old empires are going to crash, and at the same time, new weapon systems are going to enter the battlefield. And they might
that's
even
an excellent
involve
analogy.
AI.
Yes, that's an excellent analogy, Matt. I absolutely agree with you. It isn't going to be something that is happening in a balkanized Europe, but it's something that's going to be happening in a balkanized Middle East that's going to be the trigger. And as you're pointing out, we got all of this new rising technology of warfare. At the same time, we're sitting on this political powder keg.
One thing that's different, World War I was contained over there across the pond. Yeah, there was, even in World War II, there was no weapon that could directly attack the American lower 48. Any war now where America is involved, and we will be. I remember I was in Beirut. We wound up getting, you know, involved, taking sides. The next thing you know, we had the so-called barracks blown up. We went there as neutral observers, referees, and wound up, you know, siding against this faction and for this faction. Well, in any war in the Middle East, where we're siding with, say, Saudi Arabia and Israel versus Iran, and the war will not be contained over there this time.
That's right.
We are connected. It'll be our it's not a secret that our biggest vulnerability is our electric grid. You know, the mm-hmm. banking system will be a target. The electric grid will be a target. We are not going to be able to sit out this war, you know, safe at home with ration cards, you know, doing war bond drives. That's
right.
a fantasy.
That's right. That's right.
So
we set out the previous two world wars, as you pointed out. We were late to get into both of them, and we did not have it come to these shores, come to this country. But as you point out, all the rules have changed, all the technology has changed, but we have the same kind of excellent analogy that you made there, Matt Bracken. And we're going to be right back with Matt right after the commercial break. Again, you can find him at enemiesforeignanddomestic.com. You can find Matt on Twitter at MattBracken48. We're going to be right back. Yeah, it's World War One all over again, I'm afraid. I'm David Knight. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm David Knight. We're talking to Matt Bracken. Matt had an excellent analogy in the last segment. He said what we see right now is World War One in many ways. Drew political similarities to it as well as to the new war technology that people really didn't know how to control and did not understand how lethal the results were going to be, but with one major distinction. This time, the war is not going to be over there. This time, the war will be here. I want to get back to Matt and flesh this out. Before we do, real quickly, I want to tell you about the products and sales that we still have at InfoWarsStore.com. We've had to remove some of the items that we had on our 34-hour broadcast sale off of the list, but we still have Biome Defense, our popular probiotic formula, 50% off with free shipping. We also have Z-Shield that we've added, 50% off plus free shipping. We have Caveman, True Paleo Formula, 50% off with free shipping, and other specials. Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix, Secret 12, our vitamin B12 formula. Those are both 50% off with free shipping. You can see the other products at InfoWarsStore.com. We really do thank you for your support. That's what is essential in this climate of censorship, both political and economic. Let's go back to Matt Bracken. You know, Matt, you had an excellent analogy with what's going on with World War One. Of course, the thing that set that off was the assassination of an obscure political figure, Archduke Ferdinand, by some Serbian assassin. Normally, that would have just been nothing. But it was a spark in a room that was already filled with explosive gas. And I think that's the situation that we've got in the Mideast at this point, don't you?
Sure, and it's right now the young King Salman, he's trying to become the strong man of Saudi Arabia, and for the moment, it seems like his month of the long knives is working. His big purge. But you can't arrest all of these princes and just put them in a box. They have their own little sub-tribal loyalties all through the military.
That's right, all through the military. That's a key thing.
Right, and at some point, some Air Force colonel is going to bomb the palace, rock the Casbah. I don't see this being a smooth takeover with him just emerging as like an Ataturk or an Erdogan.
And don't you think that when that happens, they're going to say, and Matt, don't you think when that happens, they're going to say, hey, look, this guy, whether it's MBS or whether it's somebody else, this guy that was assassinated, that was the Iranians. And so now they're going to project everybody onto a foreign enemy so that they can try to minimize the domestic opposition. And that's how these regional wars begin, isn't it?
Well, we have some amazing things going on. I mean, we have the Lebanese prime minister possibly under house arrest and under duress. I mean, this is like theater of the absurd. It's almost unimaginable, and that place is the Persian Gulf. It is always a tinderbox because something like a third of the world's oil goes through the Straits of Hormuz. It's all within rocket range. The Iranians have advanced Chinese supersonic sea skimming missiles. The Persian Gulf can go up in flames very quickly in this type of a scenario. This isn't going to just be, trench warfare, static trench warfare in Europe. This is going to be very dynamic warfare. And there's no way that the world banking system is going to come through it unscathed. If the banking system goes down, the electronic benefit transfer system crashes, the power goes out in any major cities, we have our own vulnerability. Our cities will explode without power and without without the banking system. They'll just utterly explode.
So, and we're talking about that. You're talking about exploding. You're talking about civil unrest. Once we cut off the power because we have a just-in-time delivery system for our food, for our water. I mean, what do we do at this point? Because we can talk about this and we can say, hey, guys, we don't want a war. They're not going to listen to us, and there are factors involved here in other countries. In addition to the political instability and the balkanization like we saw in Europe just prior to World War I, we also have the religious component. And understand that Islam is both a religious and a political entity. They're combined together, and they have these multiple versions of Islam that are competing against each other just as they have these different political power systems that are there. It's a big part of that mix as well. So what do we do here in America with all of this?
I don't think that it's even possible to avert this train wreck. I see the train heading for the bridge, and the bridge is out. And it's, there's no way that you're going to go all the way through the train like Indiana Jones and, get to the front and pull on the brakes. So I think that it's time for individuals to have their own, crash survival plan. At the individual level, I would really encourage people to take prepping very seriously and at least have, as a minimum, a month's worth of food and water on hand. Because in any kind of a disruption, the first month is going to be very dangerous. If you have to go out looking for food for that first month, you're going to be like a gazelle going to the water hole that's full of crocodiles and surrounded by lions. You just don't want to have to go out for food. And in every kind of a breakdown, whether it's Argentina or the Balkans, where there were modern cities like Buenos Aires in 2000 or Sarajevo in the 90s, people could not believe that a modern, cosmopolitan, functioning city could revert to like medieval, horrors in a matter of days and weeks, to the point where people were tearing down their, pulling down their doors to burn for firewood inside of apartments to keep from freezing to death.
And we've seen it in Venezuela. We've seen it in Venezuela. We got people hunting down pets in the streets for food. They're hunting down the police for their weapons in Venezuela. That's something that has been developing just from economic standpoints there. And I've had people like Gerald Celente talking about what's going on with just the petrodollar, just the financial aspect of this. All these people are looking at this and saying, hey, what do we do with our money? Do we put it in gold? Do we put it in Bitcoin? Everybody understands the uncertainty here. But as you're pointing out, with this new technology, this is going to be a world war unlike any world war Americans have ever seen before.
And that's the other big, you know, tectonic plate shift going on underneath is the end of the petrodollar from Bretton Woods and then Nixon closing the gold window. The virtual gold of that's made the world run has been the petrodollar, which was an agreement by Saudi Arabia and the Americans to denominate all oil contracts in dollars. So this cycle, this basically propped up the dollar for the last 50 years approximately or longer. That's coming to an end.
That's right.
The BRIC companies, Russia, China, India, Brazil, et cetera, they are now directly challenging the United States supremacy. Once the petrodollar is dead, all the dollar is an American ruble. It's just an American peso. We will literally become Argentina with nukes, which is going to be very dangerous. And I don't care whether it's Trump or Hillary in the cockpit of the plane. Changing pilots can't fix the situation we're in. We have a math problem, not just a political problem. We can't just elect a new pilot and, you know, make the mountains in front of the airplane disappear.
And I would add one thing to that, Matt, and that is, you know, the petrodollar has been an alliance with Saudi Arabia. And a part of that agreement was we sell them weapons and they buy our debt and so forth from the Federal Reserve. They're now making overtures to Russia. They've had a major arms purchase from Russia. They've given Russia a lot of money. Russia has said, we're not going to accept anything other than rubles at our ports. Russia and China are trading in their own currency. They're also offering their own cryptocurrencies. They're buying gold in large quantities. So we're seeing this erosion not only coming from Russia and China, but from our petrodollar ally, Saudi Arabia, and from the prince who is now doing the purge and the consolidation there. So the petrodollar itself is on very, very shaky ground. Financially, that could be a disaster that just by itself, even if there isn't some kind of a political assassination, that could push us into a world war. As you point out, we become a Zimbabwe with nuclear weapons or banana republic with nuclear weapons.
Yeah, and another parallel to World War II, in some respects, we're a paper tiger the way that Great Britain's Navy was going into World War II. Mm-hmm. You know, Britain's Navy, Rule Britannia, the sun never sets on the British Empire. They held Singapore. They held, you know, they had ports all around the world. But when the Japanese aviation, land-based two-engine Betty bombers, advanced down the coast of Vietnam, setting up bases, they sent their battleships out of Singapore and they were sunk. So those battleships in peacetime flew the flag. They imposed the dreadnought might of Britain on the world. But in a war, the paper tigers are exposed. Our aircraft carrier battle groups, a lot of people think, are paper tigers. They're great for threatening smaller countries like in Iraq or in Iran.
But yeah, they may be the battleships of World War II. That's right. They may be the aircraft carriers, maybe the battleships of World War II, which were basically dinosaurs at that time. That was a fascinating decision. I wish we had more time. This is the end of our show. Thank you for joining us, Matt Bracken. You can find him, enemiesforeignanddomestic.com. Also on Twitter, Matt Bracken, B-R-A-C-K-E-N, Matt Bracken 48. Thank you so much for joining us, Matt, and thank you for joining us. That's the end of our show. Stay tuned. Alex Jones is coming up on the InfoWars.
Making Sense Common Again. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back on this October the 16th, 2017. Roger Stone is going to be joining us in the next segment to talk about the smears coming against President Trump. We saw Hillary Clinton already talking about that, trying to smear President Trump with Harvey Weinstein, when in fact it was Harvey Weinstein who was paying the legal fees for Bill Clinton, for the sexual assault accusations against Bill Clinton. I want to talk a little bit about some developments here in the war on drugs, some high-profile developments that have happened over the weekend. Of course, Rand Paul came out criticizing last month a study to determine the age-old question whether quails want to have more sex once they've been given cocaine. That's what our government is doing. That is the insanity. But I'll give you something else that is insane. That is what's happening in Mexico. We have more people dying in Mexico than we do in Afghanistan, for example. Far more. Let me give you some figures here. Since the takedown of El Chapo, we've had multiple drug cartels competing for the turf there. That's what happens when you have prohibition. See, it's not solving the addiction problem. It's not solving the drug problem. But it has given us a prohibition problem. Just like the days of alcohol prohibition, when Al Capone and others were riding the streets, running boards of their Model Ts and spraying people with machine gun fire. Well, it's far worse than that in Mexico. As Zero Hedge points out, since the capture of El Chapo back in 2016 and his subsequent extradition to the U.S. in 2017, drug-related violence has skyrocketed in Mexico. Multiple cartels have risen up to take El Chapo's place, and the casualties have been out of control. In the first two quarters of 2017 alone, here's the important point to listen to, more than 12,500 people have been killed at the hands of cartels or while caught in their crossfire. That's about 2,000 people a month dying in Mexico's war on drugs, which is now a literal war between competing cartels. And to give you a comparison here, for the first 6 months in the Afghanistan war, and they've had an increase in the number of casualties in the Afghanistan war, 1,662 people have been killed in the Afghan war in 2017. But more people are killed each month in the Mexican drug cartel war. So that's 1,662 versus 12,500. In other words, 7.5 times the number of deaths in Mexico related to the drug war than people who were killed in Afghanistan because of the Afghan war. And they point out the scariest part of all this is how vicious it has become. They say, just do a Google search for chainsaw executions, and you'll get a long list of horrific videos. And they say, how barbaric? Well, how barbaric is cannibalism? One of the groups that is competing for dominance there forces their initiates to dine on the flesh of their victims. That's an initiation rite. They say it's fitting when you consider that the members of the Jalisco New Generation boast nicknames like the Vulture. And they're said to be more brutal than the notorious Los Zetas, which is really saying something. After all, the leader of the Zetas chopped up a six-year-old girl with an axe. And so what are we doing? Well, we're arresting people who were peacefully taking marijuana oil for their health. People like Melissa Etheridge and Todd Rundgren were both arrested for drugs at one particular border checkpoint in North Dakota. They were going back and forth between the U.S. and Canada. And there, if you're looking at this, you can see her mugshot. She's smiling. It's like, what is this about? Is this kind of stupid or whatever? But they point out that she has been using this to manage pain from cancer. And I want you to hear what she had to say. She said that this happened back in August 17th, but it wasn't really known until this Saturday when it was released by TMZ. She said, because I'm a musician, people often think that I indulge in a fast-paced life that often comes with playing on the road, but they would be wrong. Coming up in the business in the 1980s, I saw plenty of drugs, but it never appealed to me. I'm not even much of a drinker. She says she's been using it to help treat her cancer and to keep it under control, to keep under control the responses to the heavy chemotherapy that she had. But we're going to criminalize that.
You found it. It's the real news. Live from the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and as I reported earlier, Hillary Clinton's response to her close involvement with Harvey Weinstein is to say, well, we elected an admitted sexual assaulter to the presidency. So she throws this into the lap of Donald Trump, in spite of the fact that it was Weinstein who had paid for Bill Clinton's legal fees during his sex abuse scandal, and that President Trump made comments not about actually abusing somebody, but he was just talking about a base thing. He didn't actually do anything that's alleged here. But we're going to talk to Roger Stone because there is more of this coming, an attack coming, of course, from the Clintons, because that's the way they always deflect things. If she is going to lose badly, she deflects it to the Russians. It's not her fault. And, of course, she is now in the business of deflecting the obvious treatment of individual women. She praters on all the time about the group rights of women and about feminism, and yet she has absolutely no compassion for any individual women. That is the hallmark of Hillary Clinton. So joining us now is Roger Stone. Thank you for joining us, Roger.
David, great to be with you. You're looking great today.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. So are you.
Oh, I'm violating my own rules. I'm coming on without a necktie, but I'll be candid. I left the pool to do this. So.
But I like the hat. The hat's cool.
Thank you.
All right, tell us what's coming down the pike, Roger.
Well, this entire narrative has not worked out well for the left, but because of the Clintons, Bill and Hillary Clinton are so compromised on the issue of sexual assault and abuse of women that throwing this contrived charge at Trump failed during the campaign, will fail now. And they, of course, are the worst possible messengers, having no credibility on the topic at all. As I revealed in my book, you may recall, The Clinton's War on Women, yes, of which I am most proud, the definitive oppo dump on the Clintons. I tracked dozens of women who Bill had either sexually assaulted, bitten, or raped, or attempted to force into oral sex, or in other cases, just exposed himself to. And the central point, of course, is that Hillary's role was to run the cover-up of this. As documented in David Brock's book, The Education of Hillary Rodham, it was Hillary who hires the heavy-handed private detectives and the nasty lawyers to threaten these women, bully them, intimidate them into silence, using brutal tactics, killing pets, late-night phone calls, and so on. So now I see a new thrust. The left is in the wake of Weinstein. We'll try to recycle these charges of assault against Trump. There's a woman from The Apprentice, David, who's come forward, but gone public, yet in no state in which she alleges things happened to her does she have a legal cause of action today. So it's a straight PR move orchestrated by the same people who orchestrated the woman who came forward in October, made claims against Trump, and then when she scheduled a press conference, failed to show up and disappeared from the face of the earth. A failed David Brock Soros smear operation that collapsed at the last minute when their actress wasn't willing to act.
I remember that when she was scheduled to show up and she just completely disappeared. That,
exactly.
That tells us a great deal.
Of the same thing. Now, Alex Jones called this weeks ago, actually. He said they will try to recycle the phony sex stuff against Trump in a whole new assault. At this point, I think most liberals, most Democrats I know, most progressives just wish Bill and Hillary would go away. They just need to go away. The more
you pointed out in your book, the Hillary's War on Women, she always puts herself out there as a savior of women. And yet, look at the history documented in your book about how she has trashed individual women to support her husband, how she's thrown them under the bus, how she has viciously come after them. Even women who were attacked and she defended the people who had attacked them as a lawyer. I mean, she has a long history of throwing individual women under the bus, but then she comes back and says, oh, no, I'm about this nebulous group rights for women, even though she doesn't ever support an individual woman anywhere when it contrasts with her political ambition.
Look, she is tone deaf. This is a woman who made a TV commercial in her campaign that said, women have a right to be believed. If you believe you have been the victim of sexual assault, you know, we support you. Well, what about Juanita Broderick?
Yeah.
And what about Kathy Willey? And what about what about Paula Jones? I mean, these women were assaulted. In the case of Juanita Broderick, I firmly believe, based on everything she has said, which has been confirmed, was brutally bitten and raped by Bill Clinton.
Yeah, you talk about that her being tone deaf. I mean, she just believes that there's a different standard for her than there is for anybody else. And again, you know, she holds this idea of women and women's rights and this abstraction, and clearly that never applies to her. What do you think about this rumor that she's going to become a professor at Columbia University and may give them her archives? Do you think there's anything left of her archives?
Well, first of all, they can't afford her because she and her husband are very, very, very expensive. So each class would cost $250,000 and she won't say much. That's for 15 minutes of her, very much like the Goldman Sachs speech. We get in at the same rate. So I don't see them being able to afford her. Remember this, the Clintons, they're not liberal ideologues. They are not progressives. This is a crime family. They're about money. You can justify any action whatsoever, any policy, if it helps get them power and money. They believe in nothing. This is why so many people voted for Bernie Sanders. They figured out that this woman is a fraud. She's a con artist. It's about her. She is a woman of infinite greed. She feels some entitlement to all this power and money, and she's oblivious to her own blemishes, shall we say, and she thinks she can bluff her way through anything, even if it's the deepest BS out there.
How about the latest bluff, Roger, where she said that she's going to give 10%, she always gives 10% of her money to charity. She's going to give some of this money, but she wasn't clear as to who she's going to give it to. But, you know, she's going to give 10%, always does, of her money to charity. Have you ever seen anything evidence that she gives any of her money to charity, including the Clinton Foundation?
No. I mean, look, these are people who have pocketed billions. The Clinton Foundation, not a charity. It's a slush fund for grifters. And it's been the vehicle for the facilitation of multi-million dollar bribes. It paid for Chelsea's $6 million wedding. It has enriched Chelsea and her sleazeball husband. This is a criminal enterprise. Where is Jeff Sessions? Mr. Attorney General, please wake up.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely amazing. Now, when we look at Weinstein, of course, I think one of the most interesting things about Weinstein is the juncture of politics and Hollywood, because these documentaries are going to be produced by Michael Moore. That's now in jeopardy. I guess Harvey Weinstein thought he was going to ingratiate himself back into the public mind by attacking President Trump with a documentary, but that looks like that may be in jeopardy. And it illustrates, doesn't it, how they operate in terms of politics and Hollywood, adjusting the narrative, the propaganda.
There's this new film out, American Made, about Barry Seal, the legendary CIA cartel operative who was working directly for Vice President George Bush in their illegal efforts to traffic narcotics through MENA, Arkansas, sell the money to fund the Nicaraguan rebels after the Congress had cut off U.S. funding for that anti-communist endeavor. All of the evidence is that Seal was murdered at the direction of the vice president through Colonel Oliver North after Seal confronted Bush about his IRS problems. He had enormous IRS problems. He kept saying, get the government off my back. You can do it. And he threatened.
Absolutely. We got to go to break, but I really appreciate you coming on at the spur of the moment to break this down for us, Roger. Thank you so much. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. Welcome back. We're looking at the Dow Industrials flirting with 23,000, the highest ever. And as MarketWatch talks about, they say, yeah, it indicates market velocity, but it also indicates perhaps a bubble that could burst if the Republicans, like Bob Corker and John McCain, want to burn Trump. They're going to burn the entire economy of the U.S. as well as the global economy. They could set off a crash by opposing tax reform, because that is built into the expectations of the stock market. And I thought it was also interesting that Julian Assange came out and sent a thank you note to the U.S. government, said, thank you for making it impossible for us to take money via PayPal. You put us into Bitcoin, and now we've seen a 50,000% increase because we had to get Bitcoin. So just kind of tweaking them as to what's going on. We see things like Bitcoin. We see things like the stock market going up that much. I think underlying that is a lack of confidence in the dollar. That's one of the reasons that John McAfee said that he thought Bitcoin was going to go so high. He said it wasn't necessarily that Bitcoin was such a great thing, but it's valued in U.S. dollars, and he thought the U.S. dollar was going to tank. Maybe that's what's behind the stock market and Bitcoin going up. We're going to get to some updates on what I guess I'd call the Vegas vagaries. The lies, the changing, the morphing story that we see coming out of Las Vegas, the disappearing witness who took a powder as he was supposed to be on Sean Hannity and have five or six different interviews. Jesus Campos has disappeared. Now they're reduced to looking at microscopic details of the shooter's brain. Have you ever seen an investigation like this before? I mean, this is beyond incredible. I talked about it. I said, are we back to phrenology now, where we're looking at physical changes in a brain to determine criminals, to determine motives, because we just can't see any of the video footage that is all over the place in Vegas? No, they won't show us any of that. But we do have a clip of an eyewitness who says that there was another active shooter that was targeting the Bellagio Hotel during the Vegas massacre, something that just recently came out. We're going to play that for you in just a moment. Real quickly, I want to remind you of some of the sales that are InfoWarsStore.com. And these are the things, of course, that support our operation, support this program, and we really do thank you for your support. We could not do any of this without the products that you buy. We try to provide you and do provide you with the very best quality products out there for your health, to protect the health of you and your family. And we put these things on deep discount from time to time as a thank you. For example, we have BrainForce, 50% off. We have all Emmerich's Essentials, and those are that's the entire line of non-GMO organic household products. That entire line is now 50% off. And we have things like vitamin B12, selenium, and iodine, all 40% off. And, of course, our selenium is BioTrue Selenium. We call it that because it's made from 100% organic mustard seed. We have our nascent iodine. Our Survival Shield X2 is a nascent iodine that comes from a deep earth source of minerals, very pure as well. And, of course, we also have our Secret 12, our vitamin B12 formula. That is also 40% off. And finally, you can get 20% off InfoWars Wake Up America in either the Patriot Blend or the Immune Support Blend if you enter the code WAKEUP at checkout. That's 20% off when you enter the code WAKEUP at checkout. 20% off InfoWars Wake Up America. All right, as I mentioned, we have this shifting narrative, this timeline that keeps changing. We had the sheriff that had the press conference, came out with a third revision of the timeline. And I pointed out on Friday, I said, this is going to be a big fight between MGM and the sheriff's department, because now the sheriff's department narrative, that was narrative number two, the second timeline that they had publicly offered, that was going to put a great deal of liability onto MGM for not reporting the initial shooting quickly enough. Remember, version one, they had the security guard shot at the very end of the event. As he was going in to stop the shooter, he was shot. And then they completely reversed that and made him the very first person shot, and shot before the mass shooting began, saying that that happened 6 minutes earlier. Then everybody said, wait a minute, why didn't MGM call the police? And lawsuits started flying at MGM. So I said, well, this is going to be an interesting back and forth. But it appears that not only did the person involved, the person in question, Jesus Campos, not only did he disappear, but then the very next day after Jesus Campos disappeared, the sheriff comes out, and in a very tearful, he's on the edge of tears as he's holding his press conference, he comes out and admits a lot of the stuff that we've been told is completely wrong. And says, and now this is the new timeline, and they called within 40 seconds. But the other issue is the number of people that have been saying there was more than one shooter involved. So I want to play for you. Let's get video clip number six.
What happened on Sunday night caught the world by surprise, and you were there in Vegas, but you weren't at the concert. So if you could just start walking the audience through where you were at, what you were doing, and what transpired while you were there.
Well, you know, first of all, I think what needs to be said is that, you know, there were, from my perspective and what I know, there were multiple events that occurred around Las Vegas up and down the strip that night. It wasn't just, you know, centralized at Mandalay as it has sort of been put forward in all the stories that people are hearing. I mean, if I were to kind of say one statement about everything I'm about to talk about, it's, you know, my wife and I, we were in Vegas celebrating our 10th year anniversary. And on October 1st, we were involved in an incident with an active shooter at the Bellagio. And there's no mistake in my mind about that. This is something that happened, and it we were there. So we were leaving. We had just seen the Cirque du Soleil show at the Bellagio there. It closed just after, I believe, about 11 o'clock, you know, just outside of 11, maybe about 11:10 local time. And we were walking through the casino. My wife stopped off to use the washroom. And then we decided we were going to continue through the lobby of the Bellagio. There's the beautiful ceiling, the flowers sculpture that's on the ceiling, and then they've got they've got like a conservatory, like a gardens on the other side of the lobby there. So we crossed through the lobby under the famous flower sculpture, and we entered the conservatory. And at that point, you know, people were standing around. They were everybody had like cocktails in hand. They were kind of just hanging out. It was a very kind of jovial atmosphere at that point. You know, a big show had just let out. A lot of the audience had come out and sort of followed the same path. So people had just, they had a wonderful night, my wife and I included. And so we were taking photos in the conservatory. And all of a sudden, there was just like this crescendo of screams that started behind us in the lobby. And you could just hear screams. That's the first thing I heard. Were these screams. And then I heard somebody yell, there's a shooter, there's a shooter. And then I heard distinctly like five or six pops, like pop, 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 pop.
All right, that's all the time we have for that. You can hear the rest of that at confessional.com. That is a Canadian man by the name of Jeff. And of course, as the FBI tries to erase information like that from people's phones, they're not going to erase it from the memories of the eyewitnesses. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Stacey Washington. Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're going to be talking to Stacey Washington. She is a military veteran. Her father was an Army police officer. As a matter of fact, she's fourth-generation decorated military veteran, and she has something she wants to say about what's going on. We're hearing that from the players that the national anthem is racist. They decided last night that they were not going, Fox and ESPN said they would not air the national anthem during the Sunday and Monday night football games. They're trying to hide what's happening here, but they're not going to be able to hide it. People are going to be there. They're going to be recording it. They're going to be making comments on social media. You're going to have people taking pictures and putting them on social media, and you're going to have reporters who are talking about what is happening there. And so we wanted to get Stacey's comments on this. She is co-chairman of the Project 21 National Advisory Board. She's a host of Stacey on the Right show that's broadcast daily on Urban Family Talk at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And you can find her on Twitter at Stacey on the Right. And also she has a website, StaceyOnTheRight.com. Thank you for joining us, Stacey Washington.
Thank you so much for having me today.
You know, we're seeing a lot of people push back. There was a poll last week that was taken, and they said that Republican voters dislike football more than Hillary voters dislike Fox News. It was like there was 24% that Republican voters that hated the NFL now versus 14% of Hillary voters that hated Fox News. They're losing this war. And there's now 67% of the people say they want to take away tax breaks. And, that, of course, that would be federal tax breaks that are given to the billionaire owners. That wouldn't even include what's happening at the local and state level. We had situations in Minnesota where they had a billion-dollar state deficit, yet they put in another $500 million just to build a new stadium for the billionaire owners there and the Vikings. Your comments on what's happening here, as they say the national anthem is racist, your comments as a black woman, as a military veteran and a family, four generations in the military?
You know, so David, thanks for having me on today. One of the things that I find most interesting about this is that the players seem oblivious to the fact that they're tearing down their own form of livelihood. With yes. the NFL now more unpopular than the NBA, with, you know, people who are fans are burning their $250 jerseys. I saw a video of a man burning $4,000 worth of box tickets or season passes. I'm not a football fan, but I can tell you when the Super Bowl rolls around, I'm at a Super Bowl party or throwing one here at my house. Even as a person who doesn't really enjoy football, the spectacle of it, the kind of family nature of it, it's just something that's all American. And these guys, it'll be 20 years from now, maybe it'll be 5 years from now, when the NFL is so unpopular that they can't pay them multiple millions of dollars a year.
Yeah.
These guys will be looking back and saying, what have we done? They have an opportunity. And David, let me just say this. I want to just point this out because I'm not sure if they really think about this, but I know your audience is huge. And this is a great place for me to give this suggestion, which is instead of taking a knee, how about they pull out their checkbooks? First, get with an investment planner to make sure that 5 years after they retire, they're not a member of the 68% of NFL players who are dead broke or bankrupt. And yes. then after they've taken care of their personal financial investments, if every player said, I'll give 1% of my gross income to a disadvantaged neighborhood, to a program that helps kids learn about science, technology, engineering, and math, or early childhood programming, quality early childhood programming that would get kids into reading and math and learning and group play and get them out of these negative familial situations during the day so their moms can work, then I could really respect them. But what exactly changes in inner city Chicago or inner city St. Louis? We are the number one murder per capita rate city mm-hmm. in the country. Chicago is number one for number of murders a year. What happens in those cities when these guys take a knee? I haven't seen any improvements. I just see protesters blocking the highway and getting arrested. And I see kids taking a knee and getting tossed off their football team. So this, they're having no impact other than to tear down their own jobs. And I find that really sad, actually.
Well, you know, I think part of this is also to try to tear down the foundations of our country by attacking the flag, by attacking the national anthem, by attacking statues, any kind of symbol of what this country is based on. I don't really think that they're thinking about, most of them are thinking about what they're doing. When I had Lionel on, he said, this is kind of like the ice bucket challenge. Remember that thing? And everybody was doing it, and it didn't take too long for anybody, for people to, it became the thing, and they didn't really think about what was behind it. And they're not thinking about what is behind this either. And if they really wanted to change the situation with police and the way they're interacting with the community, instead of isolating themselves and saying this is a black-only problem, they should be trying to enlarge this to the community with everybody and saying, hey, you know, this is happening to people of all different colors. Let's all come together and let's fix this problem. But instead, they don't do that. And as they come at the police and say, the police are categorically evil, you can't trust them. But at the same time, they want to make sure that only the police have guns. I mean, this is the insanity of the left as they come out there at us.
Well, I just think so. There's so much here to unpack. And I wrote a piece for Fox News Opinion to kind of elucidate my feelings on it. I'm an Air Force veteran. And while I was on active duty, I served as a member of the Honor Guard on Eglin Air Force Base. And we used to do, obviously, it's pallbearing. You do the 21-gun salute. You fold the flag over the casket. And sometimes it would fall to me to march over and hand over the folded flag to the family member. And you just cannot imagine the emotional. It's just like a huge blanket covering everyone there when these people are grieving and you hand that flag over. It's a symbol of the gratitude of this nation. Often the flag would have been flown over the White House before it was flown to Eglin Air Force Base for us to drape over the casket and then fold. And then you do the 21-gun salute. You hear the birds chirping. It's Florida. The weather's fantastic. You hear the people sobbing. You can feel the breeze flowing over you as you fire the gun. And it is something amazing to see that moment, which so many millions of Americans have shared, taken and boiled down to a bunch of rich brats, NFL players who don't even live in the real world anymore. But they come from impoverished backgrounds, a lot of them. And they're taking a moment that's supposed to be one of unity and uplift, and they're just destroying it. And so I'm all about improving inner cities. I used to be on the school board. I was an elected official. And I really care deeply for education in this country and for our impoverished segments of our society. And there are things we can do to help. These guys are uniquely positioned and able to make change in their communities. And a lot of them are philanthropic. And I guess kudos to those guys. But they're not doing enough. And taking a knee, to me, it's a stroke. It's a virtue signal. Hey, look at me. I'm taking a knee. I care about, you know, police brutality, but they don't care anything about gang violence. They don't care about inner city crime. They don't care about poor educational outcomes that put children in the prison pipeline. This is an opportunity, and they're blowing it. And when the NFL is so unpopular that they can't afford to pay them millions of dollars and the endorsement deals are no longer offered, because who wants to buy cereal from somebody who's always on their knees, then they'll probably realize what they threw away.
Well, you know, when you're talking about the ceremony and what the flag means to you as a military veteran, that's the key thing, is how tone deaf they were about all that. When President Trump, and people have been talking about this for quite some time, and when he expressed our concerns about how they were disrespecting symbols that they didn't have any connection to, that they despised, their response was to come back and say, how dare you disrespect the NFL? And I think that was the key thing right there. When we talked about the fact that they were disrespecting the flag, the veterans, the national anthem, all these symbols of America, and disrespecting, as you pointed out, the flag that plays such an important part to veterans, their response from an entitled elitist position, the NFL commissioner comes out and says to President Trump, how dare you disrespect us? I mean, how more disconnected and entitled can you be than that?
I thought it was funny because they thought that they were like, finally, he's done something. We've got the upper hand. Now we'll take a knee. So a bunch of them were like, we hate Trump. We're taking a knee because of Trump. And Americans were like, oh, whoa. No thanks.
We got to take a break, Stacey. We'll be right back. We're talking to Stacey Washington. Stay with us. I'm David Knight. And we're talking to Stacey Washington, talking about the NFL. We're also going to talk about what's going on with Jimmy Kimmel. Of course, there is a meeting that is going to be scheduled this week with the NFL Players Association, as well as the owners of the various teams. We're going to see what happens with it. They're trying to hide what's going on. They won't enforce their rules and regulations that say that they're supposed to respect the flag, respect the national anthem, and they give a reason for it. They say, we don't want our fans to see us disrespecting America, but they don't have any problem with that now, and they won't enforce that rule. When you think about all the different stringent enforcements of all the different rules that we've seen from the NFL over the years, that's an amazing rule to overlook in spite of all this controversy. But of course, another issue that has come up is Colin Kaepernick has now filed a lawsuit against the NFL saying that they are colluding to not sign him. So we're going to go back to Stacey Washington, get her comments on that in just a moment. Before we do, real quickly, I want to remind you of the products that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. That's what funds this program and everything we do here at InfoWars. We've got some big discounts on some of our most popular products. BrainForce Plus is now 50% off. It's a great way to supercharge your mind, to focus your concentration, and it is now 50% off. If you've never tried it, this is a great time to try BrainForce Plus. And if you have tried it and know how effective it is, this is a great time to stock up. We also have InfoWars Life Secret 12, our vitamin B12 formula. Get the same effect that you would with B12 injections, but you can take it by just putting this liquid under your tongue. a few drops under your tongue, leave it there for 15 seconds, and you'll get the same effect as you would with a B12 injection. Our BioTrue Selenium is also 40% off, made from 100% organic mustard seed, and Survival Shield X2, our nascent iodine, also 40% off at InfoWarsStore.com. And finally, you can get 20% off InfoWars Wake Up America in either a Patriot Blend or Immune Support Blend. Just enter the code WAKEUP at checkout, and you can get 20% off InfoWars Wake Up America. That's Wake Up at checkout to get 20% off of InfoWars Wake Up America coffee. All right, let's go back to Stacy. Of course, you can find Stacy on Twitter at Stacy on the Right, and also on the internet, stacyontheright.com. And her talk show host is a daily broadcast on the Urban Family Talk at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Stacy, we look at Colin Kaepernick. He has now filed lawsuit, and we've against the NFL owners, saying they're conspiring not to hire him. We were talking about how privileged the players are. This is a guy who finished in the bottom third of the NFL quarterbacks last year, and he's saying that they're conspiring not to hire him. I think he's going to have a hard time in court when he had that kind of performance last year as a quarterback.
What's funny about that? Okay, so just speaking, obviously not a lawyer, don't play one on TV, but I happen to know that it's pretty hard to prove collusion, right? David, so yeah. You've got this pretty high bar. He'd have to show evidence that the NFL players, not the players, but the owners actually spoke to each other and agreed individually to every one of them not hire him. And although I know they communicate, but to say that every single owner, that they're all such great pals, that they all said together in unison, let's not hire Kaepernick, that's going to be pretty hard to prove. The other thing is, look at the timing. He could have alleged this earlier, like this is October. He could have alleged this over the summer to have given himself a little bit of a boost to get people to take a second look at him. He didn't have to leave the team he was with. He could have stayed there and continued to earn, I believe it was $14 million a year was his contract. Instead, he opted for free agency and moved into the market expecting to get picked up. And when he wasn't, now he's really in dire straits because he's earning no money. So here's the cake taker for all of it, though. They meet in 2 days. So is he hoping that they'll settle with him and just pay him to go away? Is he hoping to force them to sit down at their meeting and one of them kind of take one for the team, as it were, and say, I'll hire him? You know, the league minimum is $465,000 a year, David. So all he wants to do is start getting a paycheck again. And yeah, just think of it. The median income for Americans is $56,000 a year, I think. That's a family of four, the median. The league minimum for a football player, if he's sitting on the bench doing nothing, is $465,000 a year.
Wow. So they're getting like nine times what the family four median income is. And you know, when you talk about having to prove collusion with all the NFL owners, we know that they're very divided on how to respond to this. They're not of a single mind about this. We're talking about 30 different owners, and they're all over the political spectrum. As you point out, they're going to meet with the players union to discuss what they're going to do about this. I don't think they're going to come to any kind of conclusion. I think it's going to just continue to go down this muddled way with some of them doing protests, and then the TV networks are going to try to cover it up as best as they can to try to not piss off the audience anymore. But I think it's really too late when we look at 67% of the people saying, you know, we only 18%, for example, let's take it the other way around. Only 18% support giving tax breaks to the NFL teams. Only 18%. 67% oppose that. And once they start shutting down these other lucrative contracts that they're getting for building their stadiums and everything, it's really going to throw things out. I think Colin Kaepernick is really kind of a metaphor for what you were talking about earlier, the fact that these guys have had this lucrative gravy train, and they're going to wake up in the not-too-distant future and say, what happened? I mean, we had the number one sport here. We've gone from first to worst. This is the only sport where everybody has parties around the championship game, the Super Bowl parties that we have everywhere. That's going to come to a crash, and the rest of the NFL is going to find themselves in the same financial basket that Colin Kaepernick is in right now.
Well, so first of all, I don't watch hockey either, but I know those guys love to have an audience of 20,000 people sing the national anthem together in unison. They actually ask the people to join in. When the person steps forward to sing, then halfway through, they kind of say, everybody join in. And the entire stadium for National Hockey League games, they join in. So I'm just saying, you know, it's not like there's not another sport to pick up where the football players are leaving off. But
well, take NASCAR, right? They never had to be bribed to do a patriotic display like they had to bribe the NFL. That was just as indigenous to the fans and the people in the sport. I mean, they were just patriotic Americans. They would just naturally do that. You didn't have to pay them to do that.
They're great. I mean, it depends on what you're interested in. Hockey is a cold weather sport, so it could replace football because it's during the same time frame. And a lot of cities have a national hockey team. Like, it's not like you can't find one to support. I know it's not as popular as football, but that's the point here. My big thing, David, to be honest with you, is that I don't like the way that taxpayers are forced to subsidize the stadiums, because then they're told, well, you know, your city won't have an NFL team, and that makes you not a major city. So what happens is, people like me, I've never been inside of the football stadium that we paid for. We still owe $30 million on it. And the team left and went to LA because Steve Kroenke, the owner, wanted a new stadium. And when we said we would build it, but he had to put some money in, he took the stadium to LA. So here's the thing, we're still paying on that sucker, and it won't be paid off for another 30 years.
Wow. See, that's the thing. And I did a report 4 years ago talking about that. And when people wake up to that, it's game over for the NFL. When people see how much money they're paying in taxes, I mean, you know, that's just an outrage. But let's talk about Jimmy Kimmel here for a moment, because you had mentioned him earlier. This is another guy who decided that he was going to take on President Trump and has now come back crashing against him as people are leaving him in droves. And he said, oh, well, I won't say good riddance, I'll just say riddance. So what do you think about Jimmy Kimmel?
Okay, so another guy who's tearing up his own work. Okay, so I've never seen people who make so much money be so ungrateful for their workplace. It's like me going to my radio show every day and ripping down my employer, ripping down the organization that puts my show on all over the country. That would not last. I tell you, David, I think they cut my mic from Tupelo within seconds of me tearing down their organization. So you have to know what side your bread's buttered on. You know, dance with the one who brought you. Take whatever colloquialism you like. You need to be respectful of your employer. And for Jimmy Kimmel, he kind of is his own employer, even though he works for a major TV network, because he is a brand unto himself. But he supports the livelihood of a lot of people that we don't see that hold that show up. The boom operators, the makeup women, the people who write the show. These people don't want to see his advertisers flee, because that would mean a smaller team supporting the program and some of them would be out of work. That's the kind of irresponsibility I'm seeing from Jimmy Kimmel. I could care less what he thinks about me watching his show, because I've never watched it. But I'll tell you what, the people who work for him deserve better than the treatment he's giving them by jeopardizing their livelihoods with this fool's folly. He can't beat President Trump. His bully pulpit's not big enough. His message isn't good enough. And the American people are sick of Hollywood types. Just Google The Man Show and watch Jimmy Kimmel offer his crotch area to women to feel and guess what's in his pocket. Watch him address himself in blackface and mock football players and then come at.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He doesn't realize, just like the NFL, he doesn't realize that he's an entertainer. And he's just out there, you know, he stopped doing comedy, just like it's not important to them to play football. And so that's what we say. They've lost sight of what they're about. Thank you so much for joining us. Stacey on the Right. You can find her, StaceyOnTheRight.com, and on Twitter at StaceyOnTheRight. Stacey Washington, thank you so much for joining us. Alex Jones will be coming up next. I'm David Knight. That's it for today's broadcast.